Accession number 18753, Real One.
This is an interview with Flight Officer Pip Parsons, recorded by Rodney Giesler on the 1st of April 1999 for the Imperial War Museum Sound Archive.
Can you tell me when you were born and a bit about your background?
Yes, I was born in 1920 and was very, very keen to join the services right at the beginning of the war. It appealed to me very much. But I think, quite honestly, if I had have joined, I would have joined the Wrens, possibly because they got a much more attractive uniform. But my father was against it, and he wanted me to work with him in his office, because both my brother and his manager had joined up, and so I worked there with him.
Until what was your father's business?
He was an estate agent in London. Mm-hmm. And in 1942, I was conscripted. And whereas, quite honestly, had I joined voluntarily, I would have joined the Wrens, because that attracted me. But the Wrens didn't take conscripts, and so I was, I wouldn't say I was offered, I was detailed, I suppose, really, to the WEF, and I was also sent up to Air Ministry for an interview to become a member of the WEF police, which I thought was rather special, and nobody else was sent to the Air Ministry. And it wasn't until I got home and I met my brother and told him, and he said, "Oh my God, bloody Red Cap, you will be popular." I realised what I let myself in for. But in actual fact, I did enjoy it very much, and I found there was a great deal of welfare work to be done, because you could perhaps go after an absentee and find the girl at home with her mother in bed ill, and perhaps some brothers and sisters who needed care and attention, but she didn't know how to write to her commanding officer to ask permission to stay at home, so we were able to help in cases like that.
There must have been quite a number of social problems when you start calling women up anyway,
Yes. Oh, yes. And certain women, of course, who just weren't suitable. I mean, they got up, did some terrible things, and the best thing in a way was, to get rid of them. We had one dear lady who finished up in Gloucester going round in her birthday suit. So she had to be disposed of.
And, of course, if they got pregnant, they were discharged anyway, weren't they?
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yes. Mm.
So when you started, were you, a sergeant or...?
I was a corporal to begin with, yes, and became a sergeant. And then at the end of the war, I took a commission.
Mm-hmm. So you were with the Provost branch all through the war, then, were you?
Yes.
And where were you based?
Oh, well, various places, I suppose, really, but my main base was at Winchester. And we covered a large area from there. We were never on an RAF station as such. We had an office in Winchester, and we were billeted in local accommodation. And then we used to branch out from there and do whatever jobs were required, in that area.
Can you remember any particular incidents when you had to go after absentees and so on? Home situations, problems?
No, not really.
I mean, I suppose some of them had gone on the run for compassionate reasons, and as you said,
yes,
couldn't put a letter together for their CO.
And there was one lady, we did actually pass her in the car. We and my colleague was with me in the car. She said, "Oh, look, there's so-and-so." So we stopped the car, we grabbed her, and she'd been a civilian for quite some time. She'd got a civilian clothes, she'd got a job and everything else in Civvy Street.
But you just recognised her in the street?
Yes. Huh. But obviously she had to come back and go through the formalities, you might say, of being, dishonourably discharged, I suppose.
And you didn't serve overseas at all during the war, you were...
No, I was... as a matter of fact, I was posted to Tel Aviv, and I was in London having various medicals and things like that. And my father's office had a direct hit with a flying bomb. And my brother was killed, which was very tragic, of course. so that I came out of the service for 6 months on a compassionate discharge, and then I went back in again.
I suppose, when at the height of the V1 raids.
Yes. Yes. Mm. Yes, he'd already been blown up at Dunkirk, lost his thumb, and been invalided out of the army, because of the seriousness of his injury, he was discharged, and he'd gone back to work for my father in London. Mm. So it was a great tragedy, really.
Mm. So after your 6 months compassionate leave, you went back into the WAFs?
Yes.
Did you get commissioned then? Or?
Yes, sort of. A few months later.
Still on the father's side?
No, as admin. Uh-huh. And I spent quite a time immediately after the war going round Bomber Command, not main RAF stations, but they had these auxiliaries, and de-waffing stations. And then I was sent on duties of lecturing for admin, and which I enjoyed very much. I took to that, didn't at first. I thought I might even break an arm or a leg, because I was so terrified of having to stand up in front of a whole class of girls and give a lecture, but I naturally got used to that eventually. And I went actually to RAF Hawkinge when it first opened up after the war as a WAF station. And we had to literally shoo the sheep out of our offices and things before we could settle down and get organised. And then I was sent out to Germany, and that was when I was posted to RAF Gattau.
So you were in Gattau before the blockade?
Yes,
began.
Yes, not very long before. Mm. And then after it was over, they de-waffed RAF Gattau, actually, but I wanted to stay on in Germany to complete my tour of duty, so I was posted to RAF Gütersloh.
And then you were RAF Gattau, presumably, at that time, was just a standard RAF station, was it? And
yes.
You were there on administrative duties?
Yes.
And you were there when the blockade started, presumably?
Yes, indeed.
What can you remember about that time?
Not a lot, to be quite honest. No, not really.
Was there an air of crisis, when the supplies started being blocked on the ground routes?
No, I must admit, I don't really remember it at all. Mm. We were obviously terribly lucky in that all arrangements were made, and we certainly didn't suffer in any way.
What were your memories of when you were first posted to Berlin? I mean, it was absolutely devastating, wasn't it, as a city?
Yes, but even worse, of course, was the eastern part of the city with the Russians, because they hadn't cleared any of their bomb damage at all. And we used to go over there fairly frequently because the rate of exchange was so much in our favour. But it was, in a pretty bad way.
What could you do there? I mean, you couldn't buy anything, could you? It was a wrecked city.
Well, we must have bought various things, I suppose, because we went over. And I always remember once going over to a concert in their concert hall, which was very... it was good value for money, you might say. And enjoyed it.
Were you aware of a lot of poverty at that time among the people?
No, not particularly. Of course, we had the black market, and as far as I was concerned, I used to get clothes made in exchange for coffee and cigarettes, which seems extraordinary today when you think back on it, because, that's not a life-saving piece of merchandise, but it was so much sought after by the Germans, they were prepared to do anything for it. In fact, I was having German lessons in exchange for coffee and cigarettes until the police found out. So that was the end of my German lessons, and I don't know what happened to my instructor. He probably finished up behind bars, I don't know.
Did they clamp down on these kind of deals then, as far as the services were concerned?
Oh, yes, yes. Yeah. Oh, yes, they would indeed. Yes, that was stopped, certainly, very smartly. Which is a pity, of course, because I never did learn German, which I wish very much I had done.
But I presume you were quite you stood out a bit when you tried to carry out transactions. I mean, you were in uniform, dealing with a German civilian to sort of trade coffee or whatever it was. You were easily spotted, presumably, weren't you?
Yes, I don't know really. I can't remember now. Of course, we wore civilian clothes when we were off duty, so might not have been so obvious.
Can you tell me what the WAFs did at Gatar? What sort of jobs did they do?
Well, of course, I had girls up in the front line, you might say, flight mechanics, electricians and fitters. And, of course, this rather special lady you may already have heard about, Corporal Fisher, whose work was so outstanding that she was decorated at the end of the airlift for her work. But I always remember on one occasion we had the BBC who came out, and well, she let us down in a way, because she was working 16 hours a day, and they were trying to make something of it. And she said, well, she said, it's nothing special, it's my job, and when I got a job of work to do, I go on and do it until it's finished. And so she was a very, very humble person.
And she was obviously had a lot of application, but presumably highly skilled as well. In her
yes,
job.
Oh yes. Mm. In a man's world, really, because there weren't very many WAFs working on that type of duty. Yeah. But she certainly was outstanding.
Was there a lot of what we now call sexism on the station? I mean, did the girls suffer at all?
No. Strangely enough, it's funny you should mention that, because it really was quite extraordinary, because I had no pregnancies at all, in spite of the fact that, of course, the Americans were there. And one might have thought that quite a lot of the girls would have, fallen for that, but no, they didn't.
What I was really asking was there a lot of male chauvinism when girls, for instance, were working on aero engines and so on? I mean, did they get patronised by the blokes, or was there any problem in that area?
No, there was one section commander. He was a squadron leader, I think. Well, an unpleasant gentleman, I always thought. And he, I don't know why, but he had no time for the WAFs at all, in spite of the fact that this Corporal Fisher I've mentioned was one of his personnel, and she no doubt about it, she was outstanding, and he obviously did appreciate her work, because he must have put her up for the award.
How many girls did you have on the station, aren't you?
About 50 altogether. Mm.
And they were in all sorts of occupations, were they? Not
yes. Yes, radar operators, say fitters, flight mechanics, electricians, and then I had clerks and nursing orderlies and equipment assistants. But I used to just occasionally get up about 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning and go up to the airfield, and the girls would be up there working with the chaps. Mm.
And it was a happy station, was it?
Oh, yes. Mm. Yes, I would say it was. Yes, indeed.
Tell me a bit about the airlift when it really got going. I mean, you had streams of aircraft coming and going. What are your memories of those days? I mean, were you up all hours? Were you tired?
No, not me in a way, because being administrative, I worked really, 9 till 5, except occasionally when I did get up about 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning and go up to the airfield to see my girls, working up there. But I didn't do that very often, I must admit. And I had a routine, job.
What about the sort of, I mean, you obviously watched it all happening with the aircraft coming in and being unloaded and so on. I mean, can you remember the sort of cargoes they brought in? The people working on them?
No.
There were Germans involved as well, weren't
they? Oh, yes. Great number. Yes, tremendous number. Marvellous, of course. Without a word of complaint. I do remember them being brought in, and I seem to remember that the road, certainly in front of the officers' mess, it was cobbled, so it was very uneven, and these Germans used to be brought in open trucks, standing up, but never a word of complaint. They did really, they backed us up. Well, they appreciated what we were doing, but it was a remarkable job. Really, that they did.
Now, I believe they flew up quite a number of old people and children, didn't they?
Yes. Oh, yes.
Do you remember those? Were you detailed to sort of keep an eye on those? Or?
No, I wasn't actually, but I knew about it, of course. And then, of course, we did have one little incident. One night, the weather clamped, and because we were so near to the Russian, you know, the Russian zone, we were only half a mile away, we could hear them singing their songs on their party nights and so on. And they used to send their searchlights up at night, of course, hoping to dazzle our pilots' eyes and make them lose their bearings and crash. And on this particular occasion, the weather had clamped, and a call went out over the loudspeakers for anybody who was in possession of a blanket, which they was surplus, you might say, to their requirements. Would they hand it in to a certain spot, and it would be they'd be handed out to members of the air crew, because they'd have to spend the night just anywhere they could find, sort of, you know, on the floor or somewhere, just for the night.
You didn't have any spare beds in the billets or anything for them?
No, no. And my WAF admin sergeant came to me the next day and told me that quite a number of the girls had been very frightened. So I went to see the station commander, and he arranged a meeting with the air women that evening, and he came down and he told them that he was quite certain that the Russians wouldn't invade, but that if they did, he was also quite certain that as far as the RAF were concerned, WAF quarters would be their first line of defence. And so that was very, very reassuring, and I didn't hear any more after that. It went very well.
Because it was a very nervous time for everyone, I think, wasn't it?
Yes, yes, it could have been. It was touch and go.
Yeah.
Mm. But we did carry on as normally as possible, and Boxing Day we had our football match, the girls versus the chaps. And after the first
who
few...
Won?
Oh, well, I'm not sure who won, but I can only remember that the girls and the boys used to disappear into the bushes, you know. After the first few minutes, one would go off, one couple, and then another, and so on. And it was, and of course, the Wing Commander admin, Wing Commander Sutton, he was down in the WAF quarters first thing on Christmas Day, handing out tea and everything to all the girls. It was a very nice atmosphere. Everybody pulling together.
Yeah.
That's great. And, of course, there was one other WAF officer at RAF Gatow who was Code and Cipher. And she had a WAF sergeant and an RAF sergeant, and between the three of them, they kept that office open 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. They did have a bed made up in the office, so if they hadn't got any coding or decoding to do, they could obviously have a kip of sorts. But apart from that, that's, you know, how it worked. It was quite incredible, really.
I suppose your sole means of communication with the West, if you like, with Western Germany at that time, was through radio, because I suppose all the landlines were cut, weren't they, all the telephone lines?
Yes.
The Russians would have severed them.
Yes, probably. I can't remember, you know, the details of that.
Were you ever called in to sort of meet any Russians or anything like that? I mean, was there any liaison at all between the RAF and, you know, the other four powers in Berlin?
Not the Russians, certainly. Not as far as I was concerned. There might have been, of course, because they had a headquarters in Berlin itself, didn't they, which I, you know, had no association with, but I should very much doubt that, actually. But of course the Germans were so appreciative of what we were doing. I don't know whether you've heard, we of course they used to come up to the RAF station with boxes of chocolates and bunches of flowers for the air crew, and the Chimney Sweep Association had made 100 cigarette lighters, on one side of which they had the Berliner Luftbrücke 1948, and on the other side engraved a picture of an old-fashioned chimney sweep with his top hat on and the brushes, you know, over his shoulders. And of course, as far as we were concerned, we had this wonderful occasion when two little girls came up dressed to flying control, dressed up in their best party dresses, and they presented us with a German Dachshund. And the girls had a meeting subsequently when they decided that they would call him Dakota, and as I was in charge of them, I should also be in charge of the dog. So that was really a wonderful occasion, and he was the only dog. He was accepted by the RAF as the official WAF mascot, and he was the only dog allowed in station headquarters. Even the station commander, who had an Alsatian said, no, I won't be taking my dog, but Dakota may go. And he met quite a number of the VIPs who came to visit the station, and in fact including, of course, the Archbishop of York, who actually came into the WAF quarters and had coffee with us one morning. And it was featured in the newsreel, Pathy Gazette newsreel in those days, and it was in Berlin on the newsreel of the Archbishop talking to Dakota.
What happened to Dakota? I mean, did he spend his days at Gatow?
Yes, with me, and then he moved about with me. And then when I left Germany, the aircrew, I was an RAF Gütersloh at the time, and they wanted to fly him back to England for me to get away from this quarantine. But they were going to fly him to Aldergrove in Northern Ireland and then fly him over. But I decided that wasn't a good idea, really. So he did his 6 months quarantine, and then I got him out. And there was no problem at all, absolutely none.
So he ended his days with you, did he?
Yes, he did indeed. And in fact, I was in Liverpool. On one occasion I was stationed at RAF Azakley, and a man came up to me and asked me if I ever showed him, and I explained that of course he hadn't got a pedigree because he'd been given to us by Berlin, but he was so impressed that he introduced me to a championship show judge who examined him, and he was accepted by the Kennel Club, and I used to take him to shows. And he always won a prize, never a top one, because there's an awful lot of trickery that goes on. But then he became paralysed in his back legs, which is something that happens to dachshunds, and I took him to every vet possible, including the University of Bristol. And it wasn't possible to operate, so I got the RAF to make him a little trolley. And he got around like a house on fire. It was really marvellous, actually. He really was a wonderful dog. But,
so everywhere you were posted, for Dakota came with you, and he was allowed on every station because of his historic importance.
Well, yes, yes, indeed. And he was such a darling, and I was able to make use of him in a way with children, because sometimes children are very frightened of dogs. But Jack was such a dear. It was great, and I missed him terribly.
You mentioned earlier on that you started German lessons.
Yes.
did you go into your teacher's home, or because he presumably wasn't allowed on the base?
Oh no, he was on the base. He must have been probably working on the base. Probably. I didn't go into his home, but I used to go into the home of the people where I was having dresses and things made.
But
I don't remember, quite honestly. Very simple, I should imagine.
Was there still a lot of destruction and so on around Gatow?
Yes, yes.
So, they were presumably renovating what shelter they could at that time, presumably.
Yes,
reasonably intact.
Reasonably housed. Mm. One of the wonderful things that did happen was, of course, the Berlin Operatic Society, who were so grateful to us, again, for enabling them to carry on with their productions, that we had free seats in the opera house. And, I've been to so many operas. They were absolutely marvellous. There was no heating, so you used to take blankets and maybe hot water bottles if it was necessary. But really wonderful productions, which I would never have been able to see otherwise.
Did they have the Berlin Philharmonic then?
I don't remember, but it was a full-scale production. They did all the big operas.
They had enough light for it, obviously.
Yes, yes, indeed.
Because this was a very important morale booster, presumably. I mean, it wasn't essential to the economy of Berlin, but it was essential to their morale.
Yes, yes.
To encourage that kind.
Yes. And to their livelihood, of course, the actual singers themselves.
Do you have any other memories of your time in Berlin? Any particular incidents that you can remember? Were there any other Corporal Fishers on the base?
There was Corporal Wood and an LACW Humphreys. There were quite a few girls working up in that section. But she was the only outstanding one, although the others were all very efficient.
I was talking to one of the engine fitters. They said that, by and large, they could only fix temporary problems on aeroplanes. Anything major like an engine change or so on had to be done at the other end. Presumably that's what your people did. They just
Yes, ah, well, I don't know, to tell you the truth. It seemed pretty complicated to me.
So you were effectively, what, the station commander for the WAF then?
Yes.
And there were WAF quarters, but presumably the mess was mixed, was it?
Yes.
Were there any other officers besides yourself? Or were
you yes, there is Cohen Cypher, officer, Cohen yes.
Yes.
I say, with her two sergeants, of course.
Yes. And you were in Berlin right up to the finish of the airlift, were you?
Yes.
Can you remember when the Russians gave in and it all wound up?
No, I can't, unfortunately.
No,
only this big party I showed you the picture of.
Yeah,
that's right. Yeah. When everybody came, all over the command. You know, really VIPs, the army, and of course we had the army with us at the time.
In fact, you had a Berlin garrison to feed and look after as well, didn't you?
Yes, indeed. I do remember, of course, the Navy sent out some officers on one occasion. I can't quite remember whether it was air traffic control or something in which they were interested in. And was the airmen and the airwomen, they weren't expecting to see the Navy, so they presumed they were civilians. And an order had to be issued pointing out the fact that these were naval officers and they were entitled to a salute.
They wear their uniforms then?
Yes.
They arrived.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
And of course the chaps and the girls just didn't, well, one never took it for, you know, took it for granted they must be civilians. I didn't know what the Navy was doing there, hundreds of miles from the sea.
Discipline, the usual sort of what one means by discipline, the sort of pucker, whitewash and saluting, presumably that went into slight abeyance on the station, didn't it? I mean, presumably all officers had to be saluted, but codes of dress, I believe, were eased a little bit, weren't they?
I don't know, really. No, I wouldn't have thought so, but no, they might have been. I shouldn't.
It's interesting you should say that, because I've noticed on the list I've got there is a Commander, Air Traffic Control. I've got to go see. When did you actually leave the WAF?
Well, I actually left in 1945 on a compassionate release, having spent 5 years on a compassionate posting because of my mother. And then it was obvious that, that was a thing to do, you might say. There was no other posting available for me to be near home, living at home.
So was that why you had a home posting all through the war? Because of your mother?
No. Just that last 5 years. Before I actually came out on the compassionate release.
You joined in 42, didn't you?
I joined in 45.
Oh, 45.
Right. And this is... No, wait a moment. Where are we? No, that's... I joined in 42, and I came out in 65.
Oh, 65.
Not five, yes.
And the last 5 years, 60 to 65?
Well, I was on compassionate
posting.
Yes.
What, near your home?
Yes, living at home.
Yes. Oh, living at home?
Yes.
What, and commuting to your... Mm. Every day or something? Or?
Yes, for the first 2.5 years I was a school's liaison officer for London, Middlesex, Bedfordshire and Hertfordshire.
Oh, I see.
And I'm very fond of children. And I'm also a public speaker in a way. I've had a lot of experience. And so I enjoyed that enormously. And then I was the officer in charge of the WAFs at RAF Uxbridge for 2.5 years before I finally retired.
So you were living near Uxbridge then?
Yes,
at that time.
Yes, Charing Cross.
Yeah.
And I moved down here after I retired because, Charing Cross is what I call a commuter's area in a way, and I've always been very fond of the sea. So I brought my mother down here and she lived for another 10 years. And then I've stayed on.